everyone, and welcome to this episode, the learning design one, of the Women Talking About Learning podcast. I'm Andrew Jacobs. One of the things which fascinates me about doing the podcast is how our guests take the topic and interpret it in a way which suits them. We don't know where the topic's going to go, and sometimes neither do they. This week's guests are Lena Nasiakow and Vanessa Saitano. Lena is a learning consultant and EMCC accredited coach, and holds a master's degree in lifelong learning and a BSc in educational studies. In 2017, she founded Lena's Moves, a trusted L&D partner for organisations like Netflix, H&M and Johnson & Johnson. Vanessa is a dedicated professional, deeply passionate about fostering lifelong learning and personal growth. In her role as a freelancer, Vanessa serves as a soft skills trainer, facilitator, coach and learning and development consultant, leveraging her versatile skill set to empower individuals and teams. This is a superb episode, which looks at learning as a whole and is an essential listen. Recorded in March 2024, this is Women Talking About Learning. This is Lena and Vanessa talking about learning design.
Hi, Lena. How are you?
Hi, Vanessa. Good to see you. I'm very good. And you?
Yes, I'm very good as well. Excited to do this. So today we're talking about the learning design, and what comes to your mind first when we talk about the learning design?
What comes first? I think it's the passion that I feel when it comes to learning design. It's the thing that makes me wake up in the morning very excited, and it never happens in one go, you know, when you want to design a workshop, and I know you run workshops on critical skills. I feel like if we do a design, then it takes me quite some time to get into it, and I need also some time to come up with creative ideas, with non-boring ideas. And yeah, it never happens in one go, and that's what excites me. It's not an easy process. It's not that, you know, you're going to put one or two or three ingredients and then poof, you're going to get a cake. No, it's a very creative process, and it happens in many different ways for me. How about you?
Yeah, for me as well. I was hearing you and I was thinking, yeah, it's one of the things that I love the most about this. Of course, this being there with people and giving the training, but I also like very much this part of constructing the training and thinking about dynamics and exercises that I can put, I can add, I can change sometimes. And imagining the impact that those exercises can have, and how people will receive them, if it's going to be fun, if they will be surprised or not. Yeah, I also love that part of creating, I think. I try sometimes to create some surprise. I think it's one of the things that can enhance the learning and the transfer of the learning.
Yes, I love that. And I'm very curious to hear what kind of surprises, because I think we are quite aligned in the way we design, because I call it psychological beginning, like start with something that is challenging for people and that they don't expect, so they can feel that they are here to learn something, and this way we can soothe and resistances. But I'm also curious to hear what kind of surprise elements you're using, if you could give an example or two.
Sometimes it's only, for example, I love to use an image of several chips, and one is on the floor, one is seems to be very happy, one is laying down, and there are nine doing different stuff or with different emotions, and I ask, how do you feel today, and what kind of chip do you feel today? And they laugh a lot because the images are very funny, and of course they are surprised because I'm asking that, and it's a way of telling them that learning can be fun and can be relaxed, and they can be comfortable there, and I try that the training can be a moment for them to be as they are and just be there, be relaxed, be comfortable, and also spend a good time with their colleagues or with their friends or whatever. Just a good time because actually I think some people have not a very nice memory from school. And when they hear about, oh, I'm going to have a training session in the company, sometimes they don't choose to have this training. So they have like a cold expectation, or they don't know what to expect, or they think they might be bad stuff or whatever, can be boring at least. And it's a way of deconstruct every bad perception they can, or expectation they might have about learning. And I think it's very nice to see them laughing at the beginning.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And you raise up the energy as well, and have all these underlying messages that you're sending in a non-direct way. That you're saying, "Hey, it's gonna be fun. Hey, it's gonna be different. Hey, you can be yourself." That's all things that come along. And I love the piece of, as you say, of deconstructing all the images that we have about learning, which are mostly connected with school or uni. And in my opinion, that's the biggest challenge for us as designers or facilitators. And when, I don't know, in your experience, but many times when I work with, say, managers, they are like, "No, but our people are not, yeah, they just want to hear something and they just wanna," and I'm like, "Yeah, well, you think too little of them, you know? Your people are also creative and they want to enjoy, but it's the images that we have about learning that they put constraints. It's like the prison that we built for ourselves, and that saddens me a lot because I love learning and I love this, as you say, fun, non-boring learning, learning that people enjoy, that they're like, "Oh, we're gonna have a session. Yes, let's go, let's go." Not, "Oh
Yeah.
no, not again."
Yeah. And I think sometimes, I don't know if it happens to you in your experience, but people expect not only a boring session, but they expect to be there in a very passive way because they remember school when they were just sitting there listening to a teacher that was talking about some topic, and then they were supposed to write down what the teacher was saying or putting on the board. So sometimes they have this passive way of being there, and sometimes we have to pull them to be more active and to be more participating and in the session. So I try to build every training in a very experiencing way. And I was thinking about what you were saying about this process of constructing and designing the training, that is a process that you go there and then you come back and then you come back. And It happens to me a lot because first I put the goals of the training session, and then I try to select the content that can lead them to the goals. And one of the things that I come back a lot is when I'm trying to build a logical structure to the training, and that part, and then the exercises, the selecting the exercises, and be aware if the session is balancing, if there's not a part of the session that can be very theoretical and passive for them. So I go back lots of times to make sure that it's balancing and there's a logical structure. And that's the thing that I think I spend most time about the designing of the trainings. It happens to you?
Yeah. I don't mind how much time I spend. I know I spend a lot of time on design, but I love it so much. I remember that when I was like, I don't know how many years ago, but many years ago, I was doing a master's in adult education and lifelong learning. And at the same time, I had my first trainees. And I remember for 1 hour of a class or of a lesson, I would spend at least like 10 more or more hours in constructing and designing. And my parents were like, "What's wrong with you? It doesn't make sense. You don't even get paid for all this pre-work you do. You can just go and, you know, just follow the book and whatever." And I was like, "I don't care. This is what gives me energy." And I see nowadays that I start usually from when I have the objectives and when I have the challenge and the inconvenient situation that people face. When this is set, then the creative process for me doesn't start with a concept per se, but starts with my favorite piece of the training. And that's usually an experiential exercise that I'll create, or I use a lot of embodied learning. So that could be through dancing, through theater, through meditation, visualization, you name it. And then I've noticed that on my way to the gym, for example, or on my way when I cycle, I do the moves. But people won't see you, they will just listen. So I live in the Netherlands, so I cycle a lot. And then when I go to the gym or on my way to the dance school that I'm learning salsa now, I come up with ideas and more ideas. And I'm like, oh, this is how I start constructing things around. And I'm like, okay, if that's my centerpiece, that's the thing that I love them and they're going to experience it and it's going to be mind-blowing for them. How do I prime their brains before? How do I support them to create, to enter in the right sphere of mind in order to participate in this exercise? So how do I feed their cognition a little bit? And then after the exercise, what kind of debriefing is needed? What kind of questions should I ask? Should it be in a setting of the whole group, in a plenary setting? Should it be in couples? Should it be in trios? Should they stand? Should they walk? What could support the learning the most? So this is how the process works. And I think I want to start explaining this a little bit more, because people keep asking me, but how do you come up with this? And I'm like, I don't know. It's a whole process. I to come back to your point about balance, I think, yeah, balance is also very important. What I usually see is that the sessions have the following structure. You start, and then there is like 80% of the time you listen to somebody talking. You might put something in the chat here and there, but maybe not even. And then you have to do an exercise in 5 minutes before the end. And then you're saying, "Oh, but I'm so sorry, we don't have time to finish the exercise." And, "Oh, you have questions. Oh, we are running out of time." And for me, this is so funny. And it's also frustrating, because You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of when I was a little girl and we would go with my parents somewhere, like to a friend's house, and we would play. And then at the moment, you know, that everybody's warm and is playing and we became friends with the other kids, then the parents come in and they say, now it's time to go home, go away. And I'm like, no, we just started, you know, now we just geared up and we are ready. So, yeah, so I think this is completely unbalanced. And I prefer if there are small cycles, like a bit of theory, an exercise, a debrief, and then again, a bit of theory. So at least I try to have at least three of these cycles in a 1 hour workshop. So there's always something different. And also they feel that they can play before the adults kick them out of the of the guest house.
Yeah, yeah. Also, because our capacity of having great attention and focus is more or less 20 minutes. So if you are talking for several hours, people won't be able to focus or to acknowledge that learning that they should. So it's very important to have an experience for at least every 20 minutes or so. And also, I try to have different exercises in order to, or different ways of giving the session in order to go for different people, because there are people that are more visual and people that are more kinesthetic and people more auditory. So I try to have exercises that people will have something with their body or working with someone or telling them some tales or some stories or videos. So in order to go to different people, and I think that's very important too. And also to repeat in every block the key points, because when we have a 4 hour session, which happens to me a lot, or one day, a whole journeying session. So we're going to talk about different topics in a great team. So I try to every step of the way that I'm going to change a little bit the topic to go through the key points in order for them to acknowledge those key points. So I think that's also very important for us when we are designing to have space for them to acknowledge these key points before going through another theme. But yeah, I was thinking about what you were talking now of the process. I don't know also, the same as you, when I have those ideas. But I know that there's that process of setting the goals and balancing the session and selecting the content and giving that structure and selecting those exercises regarding all of this. But sometimes I like to change exercises and pick one exercise and giving another way of doing that. Sometimes it's because I saw or I read something or I heard something, and that came to me in another way. But I think the creative process is something that it's very difficult to explain, don't you think?
Yeah, it is.
I don't know. What is the point that I think there are several ways of doing that, not just one way. I think that's it. Because sometimes it's something that we've saw or we heard or we've read about, But sometimes is this way of, okay, I think I can do this in a different way. It's not always inventing something new. It's sometimes it's picking a thing and giving a different clothes to this thing that you already did.
Certainly. And the way that I see it is that from where do we get our source of inspiration? So some people are saying, yeah, but how do you make things experiential? You do things experiential, I do them as well. And they are asking, but how does that work? And I can't be like in this mindset when I'm just sitting and reading or listening. I have to be also in a different state. So for me, ideas are coming when I'm playing board games, for example, or when I'm dancing, or when I'm even in the fitness room, in the sports hall, and then I do something and I'm like, oh my God, this exercise is really good if you want to teach resistance to senior leaders. I'm going to take it and I'm going to do it. And it's the whole fun of it, or in improv theater. But we have to immerse ourselves, I think, as learning designers in these opportunities, because this is what brings a lot of inspiration. This is what makes our creativity flow and helps
us
out. Yeah.
I think also I like to give them metaphors because I think it's it helps us to memorize things. So giving them metaphors with sometimes there are expressions that we might use in our daily lives, sometimes with an image that can be a metaphor, and sometimes with an exercise like building something with Lego. And how do you see yourselves with your team when you are working? So I think metaphors also, they can be really creative and they help people to learn and to transfer learning.
It is scientifically proven because using metaphors, then you speak to the unconscious part of the brain or the subconscious part of the brain, which is super, super useful because this is how we make learning stick. And this is how people connect or resonate with it. I mean, it's not for nothing that the whole Bible is built on metaphors and little stories. And you also mentioned something very interesting for me. You said sometimes the metaphors can be also physical. And in my world, this is called embodied metaphor. So when you say, for example, hey, I'm walking on eggshells around these people, and I love doing this as an exercise for people, so asking them to stand up and walk as if the whole room is full of eggshells. So they feel it in their body, how you are tight and how your whole perception about the person that you're working with and about yourself changes when you are in this state of mind and in this embodied state as well. And how this changes if, for example, if I tell them the next order is, imagine that the room is full of bubbles, and then people just play with the bubbles. They try to blow the bubbles, and they are happy and they are intrigued. And yeah, so if you treat a team member, if as a senior executive, for example, you treat one of your managers as if you have to walk on eggshells around them, and how different it is if you treat them as if they are bubbles that you want to play with them, you want to co-create with them, you want to help them grow. It changes, your perception changes the way that you work with them. And yeah, I love metaphors in that end because it can be very revealing of our own assumptions and our own behaviors in a playful yet very provocative way, because then you're confronted of your own behavior in a way that nobody confronts you, so you don't have to resist, but you sense it in your body and you're like, oh yes, I do that, or oh yeah, that's with Mary I'm like eggshells, and with John I'm like bubbles, and so for me, yeah, it's a very big part of learning.
Yeah, it gives you different sensations. I like to work with the with our five senses because I think that learning, it's more transferable if you use your five senses, and it's more memorable, and you can be more connected. Yeah. Well, I think we've talked about very interesting things about the learning design. I don't know if you want to add something else, Lena.
You know what? There's something that triggered me before, and I would like if you want to elaborate, because you mentioned key concepts that you are using, right? And then you're coming back to them when you have longer sessions, and that's something that I also love. I see it in terms of spiral learning. So instead of thinking learning as a linear process, okay, we cover topic A, we cover topic B, then we're going to cover topic C and goodbye for the rest. And according to all the philosophers of learners, learning and educators, they say that learning is spiral, right? It's constructive. You start and then you have to revisit it and revisit it again in different moments of time, because this is what will help people make it stick, of course, but also create connections within the concepts. And that's something that sometimes I forget, and I know it, and I'm like, oh no, but I have to, you know, I have to come back to it and circle back to it, because this is how people will learn better, and this is how they will remember it. And I was wondering how you do it. Like, do you do it in a visual manner? Do you just bake in your debriefing some elements? Do you project the agenda? Like, one thing that I love doing is that I play the agenda, and then there is always the part that we're going to work on that is dominant, and the other ones are in shadow, and then so they can always look back into key concepts. But yeah, I'm open to hear more ideas on how you do that.
So I like at the beginning to show them the agenda, and sometimes I have like a slide with that journey. And I keep showing that whenever we change the theme. Sometimes I give them space at the end of each theme for them to tell me what were the key points. Sometimes I use post-its also to put on the board when that. Sometimes I do that debriefing when I'm changing topics, and then also I tend to go back when I'm in another topic, and I say, like we've seen in the other topic, or like we've seen this morning, or like we've seen last week, and I try to connect that dots in every point, so I can remind them of that.
I love that. Yeah. One more thing that comes to mind that I've done, not in every sessions, but in some sessions, is at the end, before the closing, to provide a nice closed eye focus or meditation, a moment for meditation, where we go through a summary of what has been done through the day. And usually people appreciate it a lot. It's super fast, can take like 1 or 2 minutes, but it helps people, okay, stay with themselves and think how they can, how all this has landed on them, just to let it flow in before we finish and they go to their next meeting or to their, I don't know, home, wherever they go at the end.
Yes, I love that. Sometimes I do that at the beginning also, a moment of mindfulness for them to focus on the session. Not in every, I do that especially in emotional intelligence.
Yeah. These kind of things are difficult conversations. These kind of topics, I think, are more fruitful. Yeah. And I'm curious, as a woman, have you encountered perhaps any issues in learning design?
I would say In the part of the designing, I think not, but when I'm actually giving the training, sometimes yes, depending on the company, on the cultural company or on the sector, sometimes I can feel that more, especially if I go to a company or my group of trainees are all men, for example, or they are in an area that are most men. Sometimes I feel that I need to prove my skills. Nowadays, I don't feel I can deal with that. I don't feel afraid or anything. But I think they can be more, they have a different perspective of women. Sometimes they might think that I'm not going to be as funny or have the same knowledge as if I were a man. I don't think if that happens to you, but in Portugal, we still have a culture of men, especially in some areas, in some sectors. Yes, I feel that I can, I have to prove a lot more being a woman that I would need if I were a man.
Yeah, stereotypes, right? Gender
Yeah.
stereotypes. It makes me very sad. And I come from Greece originally, but I've never really worked in Greece in as a learning consultant. I live in the Netherlands and I work with international organizations. So it's never one culture. There are many cultures. I don't really feel that there is any kind of disadvantage because I'm a woman, but that's until you mention the humor part, which I feel I lack it a lot. So if I think of that, I'm like, oh my God, no, humor is not my strong point. When I make jokes, I laugh at myself, but usually one or two people out of politeness smile, the are like, what? But no, other than this, no. For me, it was more about the age because when I started around 24, 25 years old. And back then, I was not working in the corporate sector. I was working with teachers. So they were teachers of the age of 40, 50, almost 60 before retirement. And I was a little girl, you know, 24 years old. And yeah, back then I remember that I was not really receiving any vibes from them, but my own insecurities were very strong. I was like, oh my, what am I supposed to teach these people? But yeah, experience helps, as you say, right? The more we grow into the field, and that helps with our confidence. And nowadays, I believe that if I believe in something, I'm gonna make it. And if I don't believe in it, I'm not gonna make it, so I better do things that I believe that it's gonna be okay. I can be confident and project it as well, so people feel also more safe around me, and I can create a psychological safety for them to open up and not feel that okay, we have now to prove something or that whatever. So yeah, that's a mindset that has helped me, but I think it comes with experience and with the age as well, at least for me.
Yeah, for me as well. It was experience that allowed me to deal with that in a with a different mindset. Yeah, so I'm very sure of what I'm doing there and what's the point. So I go from there, and yes, I like to use a little bit of humor because I think it helps a lot.
It
Yes, it helps a lot.
really does. Yes.
And give them positive emotions, so it's good for learning
Yeah,
to
certainly.
help memory.
Yeah. But also, you have your own fun, right? And it's like the
Yeah.
most important to have your own fun when you give the training because people also feel it. And yeah, you go with a different energy when you're like, oh my God, that's gonna be so cool what we're gonna do today.
Indeed, indeed. So, Lena, I think we have a great thank you very much for sharing all of this. And thank you for thank you everyone who is listening, and see you next time.
Yes, it has been a pleasure for me, and it really felt that we were just chit-chatting over a cup of coffee and a cake, cheesecake.
Yeah.
So, very nice. Thank you, and have a good day ahead.
I enjoy all the episodes we record, but to cover an episode about learning profession and practice is always a highlight for me, if only because of some of the cool ideas I get from them. What about you? What did you get from this episode? Please do let us know. Email in, leave a comment on LinkedIn, etc. You can find all our contact details in the show notes. An enormous thank you to Lena and Vanessa for their time and contribution. You'll find all their details, as always, in the show notes, along with links we think you'll appreciate. If you have trouble reading the notes because they're edited on some podcast players, you can find them all on our website, womentalkingaboutlearning.com. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time, and next time it's the assertive one. As always, thanks for listening, and we'll see you again soon.